resolution is, depending upon which of these notions of resolution you use, it is a measure that indicates a certain attribute of an image, but it has an implication on the image's, the quality of the image. The spatial resolution of an imaging system or an image may be expressed in terms of a few different notions. One is a sampling interval in millimeters, micrometers, centimeters, kilometers, if you're talking about remote sensing. But nowadays, even in remote sensing, you get resolution of the order of a few meters. Sampling interval is the interval between samples obtained. Now, that is the distance between samples. We also translate that to pixel size. We assume that the pixel is that big with dimension equal to the spacing. The width of the point spread function, or a profile of the point spread function, expressed as full width at half maximum, usually in millimeters or micrometers. So we have a point spread function, which is a two-dimensional smooth function, like a Gaussian or bell-shaped function. You cut that at half of its maximum height, measure the width, and that is the width of a profile, or you can take an integral of that or somehow slice it, because it's a three-dimensional quantity and you don't have a single width measurement. You have to take a profile. Or you could use the size of the laser spot used to obtain a digital image by scanning a film. Suppose the original is a film, such as a chest X-ray film from previous imaging years or documents from previous years. And then you scan it using a laser beam. The spot size of this laser beam determines some blurring, because when you shine a laser beam and measure the reflected light, you are averaging over that area of the beam that falls on the image, and you're measuring the reflectance or reflected light from that area of the image. The bigger the laser spot size, you won't get that big, but bigger the spot size, the more the averaging and blurring. So the size of the laser spot used has a bearing on the resolution and the quality of the image that you get. Typically, when you scan films, the size of the laser spot used is between 10 and 50 micrometers. Usually 50 micrometers, but there are laser scanners that can give you 10 or 20 micrometers of the spot size diameter. Or you may say, I don't care about all of these. On the image that you have given me, right on this image, what is the smallest visible object? What is the smallest object that I can see in this image? Or what is the smallest separation between objects? One is the smallest object. What is the size of this if I can see it? So if you tell me the smallest object you can see is 1 millimeter, and anything less than 1 millimeter is not possible to be seen in this image, that is one measure of the resolution. Or it could also be the smallest separation between two objects. If there are two objects, such as these two lines, and as they get closer and closer, because of blurring, they may appear to be one object in the image. So what is the smallest separation that will remain visible? And it is that separation that is characterized. And that could be some value, so many millimeters or micrometers. Another measure is the finest grid pattern that remains visible in line pairs per millimeter. LP is line pair. So here I'm showing two lines, but suppose there are many lines in a grid, mutually parallel. Or it could also be a mesh with vertical and horizontal lines. What is the smallest separation between those lines that is visible in terms of a frequency, not sinusoid, but straight lines, black and white, black line and white space in between the lines, or the vice versa? So that is a grid pattern. What is the smallest or finest grid pattern that remains visible? And in phantom images, I showed you one phantom for mammography. In X-ray phantom images, there could be mesh patterns or line grid patterns. Also in visible light images, in testing TV cameras, there are standard grid patterns where you may see color patches and also lines, line pairs or many lines together of different thickness and separation. And they could also be used to characterize resolution. Now, depending upon the resolution, There is implication on quality of the image. How sharp is the image? On X-ray film, you get resolution of the order of 25 to 100 line pairs per millimeter, depending upon the film and the imaging system you use, and the focal spot of the X-ray tube. In X-ray systems, it is common to state resolution in this format, line pairs per millimeter. That will remain visible. Unfortunately, I couldn't get an image of line pairs, but you must have seen that in physics courses in high school somewhere, the grid patterns. Screen film combination, when you use screen, there is blurring on this because of the emission of light from the screen, and the thickness of the screen causes blurring, and then the resolution is reduced to 5 to 10 line pairs per millimeter. Mammography gives you about 20 line pairs per millimeter resolution. Computed tomography gives about 0.7 or 0.5 line pairs per millimeter. Or maybe nowadays it could be 2 line pair per millimeter, 1 or 2 line pairs per millimeter. There are systems known as microcomputer tomography systems that use specialized X-ray sources and can give you 50 line pairs per millimeter or 10 micrometer point spread function width or pixel size. SPECT, on the other hand, has very poor spatial resolution, less than 0.1 line pair per millimeter, or about separation of 1 centimeter. So that is the range of resolution that you could expect in medical images. Okay, let us now look into the Fourier transform in detail. We already used the Fourier transform a little bit, but now you will see more details on the two-dimensional Fourier transform. Now, I assume that most of you or all of you have seen the one-dimensional Fourier transform somewhere, so you know most of the properties of the Fourier transform. We will go through the properties of the two-dimensional Fourier transform in detail. I may go through some of them quickly because you have seen the equivalent one-dimensional transform properties somewhere before. So let's look at the Fourier transform and spectral content of image data. The Fourier transform, as you know, is a linear and reversible transform that maps a signal or an image from one domain, whether it is time or space or any input domain, to the corresponding frequency domain. The distinction here is that the input domain is the two-dimensional space domain, or could be three-dimensional space, or could be four-dimensional space and time together. So for each input dimension, there is a corresponding frequency variable in the output. And the output will have as many dimensions as the input. So converting an image from the spatial domain or space domain to the frequency domain or the Fourier domain helps in several activities and several types of analysis. One is assessing the spectral content, the frequency domain information content of the image. Assessing the energy distribution over frequency bands. So one, it gives you the complete spectrum over the frequency range of interest or that is possible in the sampled image, which is up to the maximum frequency, which is half of the sampling frequency. Now, within that range, you may break the frequency into several bands of interest. You may be interested in some bands more than the other bands. So the energy distribution over the frequency bands, as you define, will become possible. Designing filters to remove noise can be done efficiently in the frequency domain because you will have better information about the spectral distribution of image data and noise. Designing filters to enhance the image is also possible. And then extracting certain components that are better separated in the frequency domain than in the original space domain or image domain. Now, this is a reversible transform, so some would say that there is no information gained or lost because by applying the inverse transform, you go back to the same image data you started with. But of course, the information is presented to you in a different format against the frequency variable rather than the spatial variable. So it is reversible. There is no information gained or lost, that is correct, but the information is presented in a different manner that could facilitate the extraction of certain components that are separated in one domain but not in the other. The two-dimensional Fourier transform of an image fxy is denoted by capital Fuv. X and y are the space variables or spatial variables. U and v are the frequency variables. Instead of omega or f, we will use u and v for the frequency domain corresponding to the Fourier transform of the image. So Fuv is given by the double integral on x and y over all x and y. In general, you could write minus infinity to plus infinity, but in practice, it is bounded by the limits of the spatial extent of the image. Fxy, the image, multiplied with the kernel function, exponential minus j2 pi ux plus vy dx dy, integrated over the entire space. So here, the exponential function is a four-dimensional function. In the case of time domain signals, this would be f of t exponential j2 pi, if I use f, I cannot use f for frequency, so it will be j omega t, where omega is 2 times the frequency and t is the time variable. So instead of 2 pi in the frequency domain, you would have, in the case of time domain signals, you will have time multiplied by the corresponding frequency. Here you have space, x, multiplied with the variable u that represents the corresponding frequency, and then also y, the second dimension, with another frequency, v. So there are two frequencies now, horizontal and vertical. If you have a three-dimensional image, then there will be another, ux plus vy plus another pair of variables, uv, w, it could be wz. So there are two frequencies, u and v, in the horizontal and vertical directions in the case of a two-dimensional image. Now, this four-dimensional function is separable, and you can separate that as exponential j2 pi minus j2 pi ux multiplied with exponential minus j2 pi vy, and each one of them could be expanded into the cosine and the sine corresponding to those products of the variables. So you have a cosine 2 pi ux minus j sine 2 pi ux, and for the second part, cosine 2 pi vy minus j sine 2 pi vy. Images are typically functions of space. Now, you may have two-dimensional functions that are related to some other variables, not necessarily space. But in most cases, if you say you're talking about an image, it is considered to be a function of space. The units of measurement in the image domain will be in terms of spatial variables in meter, centimeter, micrometer, millimeter, and so on. In the two-dimensional Fourier domain, the corresponding unit of frequency is the inverse of that space domain variable, and it would be cycles per millimeter, cycles per meter, or instead of cycles per millimeter, it would be simply millimeter inverse, because cycles will not have a dimension. So the physical dimension here is mm millimeter to the power of minus 1. Frequency is also expressed as line pairs per millimeter, not using sinusoids, but square functions or binary functions, black or white. If the distance to the viewer is taken into account, we get a different frequency unit. In terms of cycles per degree of the visual angle subtended at the viewer's eye. So you have some cycles per unit of space, cycles per millimeter somewhere there on the wall, but that, the impression of that picture on me will depend upon the distance. The closer I get, the bigger the image is on my retina, but the farther I go, the smaller the frequency, or higher the frequency, smaller the wavelength, because of the projection of that information onto the back of my eye. So to take that into account, you don't measure the frequency on the actual image, but at the retina of the viewer, and then the cycles per millimeter on the image gets translated to cycles per degree of the visual angle subtended at the retina or on the viewer's eye. So frequency here is then different in cycles per degree. Now in 2D Fourier transform analysis related to image data, we do not use Hertz, which is used in the time domain. To compute the Fourier transform with digital images, you normally would use the discrete Fourier transform. And the DFT would be computed using the fast Fourier transform algorithm, FFT, and the same FFT that you use for one-dimensional signal analysis or Fourier transform of 1D signals could be used here, applying one dimension at a time. And that is because of the separability of the function and also the symmetry of the two-dimensional Fourier transform kernel function. So the 2D DFT of an image FMN of size m by n pixels is given as FKL. It is common to use K and L for the discrete frequency space, m and n for the input space domain in discrete coordinates. You would not want to use I and j, although in programming we use I and j as indices, because we use j for square root of minus 1, and mathematicians would use I for square root of minus 1 in the Fourier transform. So we use mn for the image domain and kl for the frequency domain in discrete coordinates. So here, instead of the integral, you have the summation, double summation on all space across the size of the image, m going 0 to m minus 1, n 0 to n minus 1, fmn, and the kernel function now is discretized, minus j 2 pi mk over capital M plus nl over capital N. Now, when you have a discrete signal with n samples, in one-dimensional Fourier transform analysis, you might have seen a condition that for complete representation and lossless recovery of the original signal with n samples, the discrete Fourier transform must be computed for at least n samples equally spaced around the unit circle in the Z domain, or let us simply say n equally spaced frequency samples from 0 to the sampling frequency. If you use less than n samples, you will not be able to recover the original signal completely. If you use more than n samples, you are wasting time computing unnecessarily additional samples, but no harm done. So for complete recovery of FMN, in this case, with m by n pixels, the Fourier transform FKL must be computed for k going 0 to capital M minus 1 and L going capital to 0 N minus 1 at the minimum. Otherwise, it is not a reversible transform. The inverse transform will give the image back. FMN is the inverse transform of FKL, some KL going 0 to M minus 1 and N minus 1. FKL, the Fourier transform, multiplied with the conjugate of the kernel function used for the forward transform, which is the same as before, except now you have plus instead of minus j2 pi. So this kernel function is essentially the same as what we saw earlier, except for a change in sign. And in some books and references from other domains of image processing or signal processing, one could use exponential plus j2 pi for the forward transform and minus for the inverse transform. It doesn't matter, as long as you are consistent. In engineering literature, it is common to use exponential minus for the forward transform and plus for the inverse transform. If you go to mathematics, geology, and geophysics literature, you will see the opposite. Now, if you were to look at these expressions carefully, this says the original image FMN may be made up of a number of exponential functions, mn of them, And each one has a certain weight, FKL. So this expression says an image may be resolved into a number of exponential functions, weighted and summed. So an image is seen as a weighted sum of complex exponentials of various frequencies. Earlier I said that in the continuous domain, a signal or an image may be shown as a weighted sum or integral of delta functions using the sifting property. Here we are saying that an image may be resolved into a weighted sum of exponential functions. And these exponential functions are mutually orthogonal. So each one is orthogonal to any of the other exponential functions, so they're all independent in that sense. Each one gives you a different view of the image. And how do you get this? How do you get the coefficients FKL? That is the forward transform. The forward transform says to get the weight FKL for a particular exponential, you take that exponential function, which is a sinusoid, a complex sinusoid made of a cosine and a sine. Take that, multiply it with FMN, that is, take the projection of that vector onto the image vector or matrix. And the projection is given by this, which is like a dot product, point by point multiplication and addition over all samples. So each component of the Fourier transform, each coefficient, I should say, of the Fourier transform FKL is given by the projection of the given image onto that particular exponential of a certain frequency. That is how you compute the Fourier transform. And in the reverse or inverse transform, you reconstitute the image, FMN, by adding those complex exponentials with the corresponding weights. And if you want to filter, you modify these by multiplying with some filter coefficients. So here is a simple view of one-dimensional basis functions. The exponential functions are called the basis functions of the Fourier transform. So we have first zero frequency, and this is one cycle over that interval, whatever that interval is, and then two cycles, four, and so on. At the end, you have seven cycles. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven cycles. So these are the first eight sine basis functions. And then in 2D, the basis functions look like this. For the first 64, eight in one direction, eight in the other direction. This is constant DC. We use the term DC, direct current, here also. There is no current in an image, but it means zero frequency. Rather than saying zero, zero frequency, it is easy to say DC. So that is zero frequency, horizontal frequency increasing. This is vertical frequency increasing, and these are all various combinations. So that is what the sine functions, these are the cosine functions, and these are the sine functions, which are simply the same, shifted. So that is what the basis functions look like. Now, to compute the Fourier transform of an image using the FFT, because most commonly used FFTs use 2 to the power of an integer, 2 to the power of n samples for efficient computation, it is preferable to add the given image with zeros so that an n by n image is padded and extended to n by n, where n is an integral power of 2. So if you have an image that is 100 pixels by 93 pixels, instead of taking the FFT using those numbers, you would pad the image to, let us say, 128 by 128, which is 2 to the power of 7, and then use an FFT algorithm. Then the DFT, discrete Fourier transform indices, will run from 0 to n minus 1, and the forward and inverse transforms will both have J2 pi over n, mk plus nl. So it simplifies the representation a little bit. And instead of putting 1 over mn here, some authors put 1 over n here and 1 over n there, equally for the forward and inverse transforms. Some may take 1 over n squared and put here. So as long as you take care of the scaling factor in total, forward and inverse, you are all right. If you don't put anything there, you must put 1 over n squared here in order to conserve energy and satisfy Parseval's theorem. So here, all indices m, n, k, l will go 0 to n minus 1. Okay? Some simple examples. The rectangle function is defined as fx, y equal to a for x between 0 and capital X and y between 0 and capital Y. That is the rectangle function, and let the height be equal to a. And its Fourier transform, if you work the integral, will turn out to be axy, a sinc function, sine pi ux divided by pi ux, multiplied by pi vy over pi vy. I'll let you do the simplification of the Fourier transform, but you have done this in 1D somewhere. And there is a phase factor, exponential minus j2 pi ux, j2 pi vy, because the rectangle function defined is not centered at the origin. So in general, the Fourier transform of a real image is a complex function with the exponential here. And that is why I used this rectangle and not the centered one, to emphasize the fact that even if the original function is real, the Fourier transform is complex in general. So there is a magnitude function, and then there is a phase function. The exponential functions here indicate the phase components of the spectrum. If the image has even symmetry about the origin, then you will have a real Fourier transform. So if you consider the rect function is a standard definition. It's equal to 1 if the magnitude of x is less than half, and y is also less than half. So it is equally spaced on the x and y axis about the origin, so it is a symmetric function. And it is 0 for x and y greater than half in magnitude. Then the Fourier transform is the sinc function, which is sine pi u over pi u sine pi v over pi v. The magnitude is equal to 1. The area is also equal to 1. So axy will be equal to 1 here. And this double-ended arrow is used to indicate that this is a Fourier transform pair. So the forward transform of the rect is a sinc. The inverse transform of the sinc is the rect function. And the sinc function is defined in this manner, and it is separable. You have seen the sinc function in one dimension. In 2D, the sinc function looks like this. Here is a rectangle function of a certain width, and this is the Fourier transform. I'll explain the format in a little while. When you reduce the size, the width of the sinc function, the width of each lobe of the sinc function increases. Reducing the width here means increasing the width in the frequency domain. There is an inverse relationship. If you reduce it further, the width here, or the period of the sinc function, increases further. So as you make the image smaller and smaller, there is more high-frequency energy in the frequency domain. So these are examples of rectangle functions or rect functions and the corresponding sinc functions, but I'm showing only the magnitude here. And because these are symmetric functions in the image about the origin, which is taken to be in the center, the Fourier transform is real, so it only has the magnitude component. In this display, zero frequency is in the middle. Zero, zero is this. The u-axis is this. The v-axis is that. In the image domain, this is the x-axis, the horizontal. Y is the vertical axis. Now, there is the confusion, or potential for confusion, between matrix representation and the first quadrant Cartesian axis representation of images, fxy or fmn. So you have to be careful about that as to which is vertical and which is horizontal. So there could be some switching of these two if there is a mix-up of notation.